Please go ahead. This afternoon's conference call is now being recorded.
Thank you, Tim. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the PPSAI Working Group call on the 17th of June, 2014. On the call today, we have Graham Bunton, Val Sherman, Tobias Sattler, Holly Raich, Osvaldo Nuova, Steve Medelitz, Darcy Southwell, Don Blumenthal, Chris Pelling, Justin Macy, Todd Williams, Libby Bainey, Sarah Wild, Griffin Barnett, Tim Ruiz, Luke Sufer, Tatiana Kramostova, Alex Deacon, Volker Greenman, Susan Prosser, and Susan Kawaguchi. We have apologies from Michaela Nyland, Christian Dawson, and Jennifer Standiford. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Amy Bivens, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and David Cake just joined us as well. I would now like to turn it back over to you, Don.
Appreciate it, Terry. I assume Michaela and Jennifer. Well, I know Michaela's playing in the sun in Miami.
Oh, bad luck.
Normally I'd be jealous, but Michigan is not bad today. Not that there's a hosting conference there, so I know it's taking a lot of people away who will go directly to London from there. In any event, thanks for joining today. First, just want to remind people to update your SOIs if there have been any changes. We did get a new SOI yesterday. We've got a new member, Dan Burke, I think it is. Dan or Daniel, I don't know. I haven't met him. He's from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. I was hoping he might be on the call today, but I guess not. Maybe we'll meet him in London. Kathy just joined. I just mentioned that because Holly had asked in chat. We're pretty well on schedule, as we've talked about the last few weeks. What I hope we can do, at least, is conclude our preliminary discussions on D4, which has to do with malicious conduct, and then spend some time talking about the how we're going to approach the face-to-face meeting in London. I see Marika's got the language on the screen. You know, what are the forms of malicious conduct that would be covered by the scroll over? Public point of contact. And I guess some of the issues here are still just what does it mean would be covered, and what are the forms? If Kathy. Yes. Actually, since they're kind of cross, some cross connections. Yeah, why don't we, that's fine if you'd like to. Can we take a look at D2, Marika?
Excuse me, Marika, you need to give me 1 second because I actually need them to upload. The updated version. So maybe you can start talking, and in the meantime, I'll get that.
Yeah. Well, I guess the question I'm sorry, but I kind of fuzzed out there. I didn't hear you were still talking. I didn't fuzz out. The Wi-Fi connection did. Sorry. Well, Kathy, let me start. Do you have any concerns about the preliminary conclusion for D2?
Don, can you hear me now?
Kathy.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, great. First, thanks for going back to this. I appreciate it. Let me mute my computer. Yeah, it's the background information, not the preliminary conclusions so much, that I wanted to see if we might be able to round out a little bit. On both questions 2 and 3, the background information opens with a link to the WHO is Privacy and Proxy Services Abuse Study. And at least when I link to it, it's the call to the study, not the study itself. So I've offered the revised link to go to the study itself. You know, there's a cover page with the summary, and then you can get to the PDF of the full study. So I recommend that we change that link. And then in this Privacy and Proxy Services Abuse Study, the really surprising thing is not that people use proxy privacy. To me, it wasn't that people use proxy privacy names to some extent for malicious activity. I think we all knew that was going to be a finding. The real kind of surprise of the study was that there are a number of companies, legitimate companies, that use proxy privacy services at a high rate, not for malicious activity, for completely legal activity, at least according to the person who did the study. So I thought that briefly we might share that as well, including the finding that banks who have not maliciously registered domain names use proxy privacy services at a much higher rate than the average. And so I've offered just a few little edits, not taking anything out, but just adding a little bit in that kind of, rounds out a little bit more what came out of this very interesting study on abuse, and recommend it for both questions 2 and 3 because it's the same opening in both. Thank you.
Okay, appreciate that. Is somebody who isn't on mute, if you could please, there's an echo and some background noise here. As Steve suggested, why don't we work on edits on the list? If you could send something, we'll work it.
I did send something to the list. I apologize. I sent it late.
Okay. Well, particularly since it's background information and not to the conclusion itself, let's see if we can work it in and focus on the substance of. Well, unless there are other issues about D2 and 3, focus on the substance of D4. But appreciate it. I think it's been on the record for a while that commercial entities use proxy and privacy for other than conducting business as such. But it's if we should beat that up, let's take a look. Any bills have any points to talk about with D3, 2 or 3? Or should we just move on to 4?
Move on to 4.
Okay, sorry about the scramble there, Marika. Could we go back to D4? Okay. Well, let me open the floor. There's a lot of issues here, kind of subsumed in the issues of what the extent to which privacy proxy will have to act, what will require it to act. I guess I should be saying. If there are forms of malicious conduct that would be covered, is that suggesting that there are some type of forms that we would be covered some other way? Holly?
Thank you. It's Holly for the record. I'm a little bit surprised by this question because I'm not sure that we actually know all the types of malicious conduct, and if we do, does that mean that we're going to know all types of malicious conduct in the future? I'm reluctant to have any kind of list, simply to say malicious or potentially illegal, because, first of all, it's going to vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction what actually amounts to illegal. It also presupposes we know all types of malicious conduct, which I suspect we don't. So I'm just interested that we think we can come up with a list. I think I'd be more comfortable if we had terms in there that is malicious or legal or something, and then let the law enforcement people, or either that or simply ask law enforcement people for a list and for examples. I would be reluctant to have any kind of closed list on malicious conduct that didn't allow for the fact that there are always going to be new and different ways to be malicious. Thanks.
I'm sure with that our new law enforcement member would agree with that statement. Okay, I had a thought there, but let's go to Steve.
Yeah, this is Steve. I agree with Holly. We don't want to have a closed list, but I think it's helpful to have an indicative list. And there are precedents for it, as set out in that in the discussion column. But I agree, we don't want a closed list because there will be new forms of malicious behavior that we haven't anticipated. I think the reason to have an indicative list is so that you don't have the argument, well, that's not covered, you know, for some of the things that are on there. So I think that's probably the best way to proceed. And I'm not sure that this group has to come up, you know, with a word for word statement of what that would be. I think to some extent that's an implementation issue, but I think if we give an indicative list that's somewhat open-ended, I think it will help to clarify what types of reports need to be dealt with, need to be responded to. Thanks.
Thanks. Kathy?
Thanks, Don. I was sorry to miss the meeting last week. So, but here's my question. I see long lists of prohibitions. You know, long lists coming out of basically the new GTLD discussion. Long lists of prohibitions against malware and botnets and phishing, trademark infringement, copyright infringement. Was there any discussion last week about the difference between allegation and almost like an affirmation or proof? So someone alleges something illegal versus someone has proven something illegal. And so when I look at the list, you know, say provided in the Beijing communique, and I think about implementation at the registrar level or at actually, you know, the proxy privacy service provider level, I'm wondering, you know, malware, spam, some of these things, you know, we have pretty good tools for proving independently, whereas other things like trademark infringement or defamation are a little harder to prove without more of an independent judiciary or judge. So I was wondering if there was a discussion last week about that and what people are thinking on that.
Well, I think there's been more than one discussion just well, we've talked about the issue of what registrars or potentially privacy proxy providers would act upon, whether it would be law enforcement or some other kind of submission. I don't know how you would differentiate proof or allegation, even in the context of court order. That's not necessarily proof. But let me ask, to what extent would your question come under the heading of would be covered, so that we could bring that discussion into D4? I mean, what does that phrase mean?
Well, I think I haven't quite gotten to the standardized forms yet and what those standardized forms are or even why we need them. But certainly, if there is some kind of standardization of form, there should be a discussion on this issue. What kind of evidence is being presented? If you're going to reveal someone's personal data, it should be on more than just a mere accusation. And so, again, exploring some of the evidentiary issues and where we would put it. But more, again, because I missed, you know, a number of us missed the discussion last week, what is the threshold? What is malicious conduct? Is it an allegation? Is it an accusation? Or should the accuser be providing, should the person filing the complaint be providing some form of evidence? And is it the proper place to be raising that issue?
Well, we did talk about the idea of forms and best practices for submitting abuse complaints, but I really think that's in the discussion we had, it wasn't really, I don't think it was suggested that would be part of our work. Let me move on to Holly.
Thank you, Holly, for the transcript records. Kathy, I think we're mixing up two things. One is the extent to which something has to be proven, and I would have reservations about proven in the sense that obviously some things have to be before a court to be proven. I think what we're probably thinking about is what would be the standard required to get something like a warrant or its equivalent. But I think that's separate from malicious. And what I was thinking about in malicious is there may be things that may not necessarily be illegal because, for example, in some countries, forms of spam, things like that, are not illegal, but they're nevertheless things that we don't want to happen. So we have to think through, and I think that's why Steve's idea of a list, what do we want to put on that list, and the extent to which we put things that, while may not be technically illegal in most countries or many countries, may nevertheless be things we don't want to encourage. Thanks.
Kim?
I guess, I don't know, maybe this is what Kathy's asking too, and maybe we haven't gotten there yet, but my question would be, have we discussed, I don't think we've discussed necessarily what the provider has to do when they receive a notice of malicious conduct, you know, those things that we've listed. Just that these are the things that they may have to take some action in regards to, but we haven't detailed yet completely what that action is. So part of that might be at some point, you know, they investigate further on their own, and maybe, you know, unless there's a court order or something that requires them to do something, they may have some leeway into how far they go or exactly what they need to do, and maybe in other cases it might be prescribed, you know, with notices or whatever. But at any rate, that what we're really talking about here is what are the things upon which they have to take some action, but we haven't talked about what that action is. Is that where we're at, or did I misunderstand that?
Well, I think any action they would take is ultimately going to be covered when we talk about reveal. And Steve suggested this, suggested that a lot of what we're talking about here will be covered when we talk about reveal later on. Steve suggested that in the chat. To be honest, this question confuses me a little. And I'm trying to keep up with the chat, but I can't, so never mind. Let me toss in, do we need a list of specific conducts? Given the changing nature, or would some kind of cover phrases like security affecting security and stability of the internet be acceptable? as either a catch, as either an overall phrase or something that could be added to a short list. I don't know if it would be too long. It would make sense to make it too long. Ali?
Just a thought, and what I was saying in the chat, I think we've got two types of response. We've got a 24/7 abuse point of conduct for law enforcement agencies, and we'll leave that definition alone for a while. But that's for the most serious type of, I would imagine, criminal behavior that really would threaten the stability and security of the Internet and criminal activity. There are, I think, other forms of behavior that might be, say, IP infringement, other malicious activity, that are not quite as serious, and that would probably require a less instantaneous response, but would nevertheless warrant a response. So I think there are kind of two parts to the question about to what do we respond and how quickly. Thanks.
Okay, appreciate it. And responding to something Steve, responds, as I said toward the end of my thought, it could be a catchphrase at the end of a list to try to cover things that we can't anticipate. So where are we here that we should be putting together some kind of a list as something indicative of the types of behavior that should be brought to the point of contact? Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Just looking at the notes from last week, I think two examples of language were called out, which indeed I think give this kind of indicative list and also this kind of open-ended. There may be other practices that are not specifically called out and may also fall under this category. So I guess the question is probably to the group, is there a preference over one or the other, or is there agreement that indeed any kind of reporting should be along the lines of the language that is captured in those two examples, or is there any alternative wording that people think should be considered or referenced here in relation to the preliminary recommendation on this topic?
Okay, thanks. Go back and take a look at that. Excuse me, Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve. I personally, I'm happy leaving that as to implementation, drawing from those two statements, and as long as it's an indicative list with flexibility, open-ended at the end, I'm comfortable with it. Thanks.
Yes, the ranker starts punting this to us, so we'll punt part of it to staff. Good. No, but I think you're right that a lot of these are going to be details that will have to be worked out after we come up with some guidelines. Is the would be covered really an issue, or is this just saying what forms of conduct should be referred to the POC? Presumably, which would lead to our, and we take up the details when we do get to reveal and relay. Kathy?
Hi, let me ask another question about the discussion last week. Thanks, Don. Was there any discussion about the conduct being alleged, and the link between that and the person who is seeking the information? So, and let me ask, the people on the call who run privacy proxy services, is there something in the inquiry that comes to you? Do you want to know anything about the connection between the person making the allegation, the person seeking the information, and the allegation that they're making. So I can allege somebody is involved in defamation, but it has nothing to do with me. But yet I'm still seeking that information. You know, I'd still like to know, you know, who's underneath that. I'd love to know, you know, who's behind certain types of WikiLeaks, for example, or certain types of other leaked material. But I have no kind of legal standing in a technical sense to get that information. Do we want some information here for that contact to know who it is that's making the inquiry?
Mm-hmm. Well, I've got a thought there, but does anybody else want to jump in? No, Steve did in chat. Is that really relevant to the forms, to the types of conduct, as opposed to what we'll talk about under reveal when it's the types of information or the appropriate complainants that would lead to a reveal or a relay? Kathy?
I'm not sure where the information would go, because by the time we get to reveal, we're already talking about the process of revealing, whereas this seems like a question in the process of reporting, and we're already talking about recommendations and the preliminary conclusions of standardizing reporting forms. And if we are taking this question, D, question 4, I think, to standardizing some kind of reporting forms, and I don't know how we jump there from a list of potentially malicious activity, then isn't it important to include in that form who it is that's asking the question and to what extent they may or may not be entitled to the information that they're asking for or have a link to that, a direct link to the need for that information? I think by the time we get to reveal, we're already talking about the process of revealing. This, again, is the process of reporting the information that then goes to that designated point of contact and the proxy privacy provider.
So okay, Tim?
I think the time may be now.
I actually had the same thought as far as the form goes. So as long as we're not going to say, well, we've closed off the discussion on this standardized form, if we can leave that open as we talk about these other things that we've got coming up yet, then that's great, so that we can say, well, you know, this is another recommendation that we might include in our what we say about the standardized form, so that implementation can get all that information together. I just don't want these things to get lost. Say, well, we just say, well, there should be a standardized form, and then we leave it go, because along the way we might identify things that need to be on that standardized form, and those should be included in our recommendation. Thanks.
Fair enough. Steve?
This is Steve. I think I would agree with Tim that if we are having, I'm not standardized forms is not directly responsive to the question here. I think it would be a great idea to have standardized forms, but you know, I don't know that that's a requirement. And happy to, if we discuss that further, we could talk about what would be in those forms. But I think this is, who is doing the reporting is quite relevant to reveal, because reveal, one flavor of it is you tell the reporter, you don't tell anybody else who the actual registrant is. And so for that, you need to know who the reporter is and what is the basis for the report. So I think it's quite relevant there. I don't think it's as relevant. It's certainly not directly relevant to the question of what type of conduct would be covered. Thanks. Mm.
Appreciate it. Anybody else? Okay, it's still within our ability to take a look at this prelim conclusion and decide that it needs to be revised in and of itself. and just take the reporting form and the other pieces out of here while we keep the issue in mind for as we go along. Just make a note of some sort in the template along the lines of, well, legal, what's holding and what's dictum. I think a fair number of folks on the call will have heard those terms before. But if there's nothing else, let's just kind of compare this week's discussion to last week's discussion and go ahead and we'll take a look at the wording in the preliminary conclusion and see what's the most see what the best wording is to go forward with. Any other thoughts before we move on to just talking about the London meeting? Okay. Marika, could you bring up... here you go. Well... Mary sent out this document, I think, yesterday. It's kind of a working document for us to use in London. Those of us who are there or working group members that are going to be participating by phone. So that we've got a good, solid document to work from during the session itself. Excuse me. Now, I think what we're thinking about is, well, the usual roundtable introductions, and then discussing these, you know, presenting these findings to the audience. I think that C is going to generate a lot of discussion, particularly if some things I've been told offline about who may show up to talk are accurate. I think she's going to generate a lot of discussion, so we've put aside a good chunk of time for that specifically. And then we want to have time just for audience questions in general. Now, that's the overall look at what we're thinking about. The important thing, I think, in these documents is for everybody to take a look at them, make sure you're comfortable with the kind of abbreviated form compared to our overall templates, and take a look at our questions for the community. We won't necessarily ask all of them. There won't be time in an hour and a half to cover everything. But have these ready if specific questions about provisions come up, or if we need to throw questions out to fill time, which I hope isn't the question. Anybody who's... And then the other thing kind of hanging in the background here is the PWG report and the proxy privacy recommendations. I think our preliminary thought is that we'll mention the report, but not necessarily devote any time to it unless we are asked. I mean, after all, the EWG will be meeting for 2 hours before we tee up. So I'm not sure it's necessary for us to really take it upon ourselves to go into detail on those pieces. Again, unless it comes up, and we'll have materials ready if we need to. If anybody's taken a look at what Mary sent out and appreciate your thoughts as to the, again, what's in these abbreviated, well, the conclusions aren't, but just the abbreviated materials and also the questions that we plan to ask if it comes up. Either are they good? Do you have any additions? And as I should add that by definition, we'll be loose in managing the meeting in London. We'll kind of have an overall outline, but certainly let it go where the participants direct us to some extent. because they're the ones we talk all the time. They're the ones that we really need to hear from when they have the opportunity. Kathy? Kathy?
Oh, hi, Dan. I just wanted to share that I think, you know, there may be specific edits coming. I'm sure people are still reviewing it. But I think this is a nice presentation. These community questions, I think it's presented in a way, as opposed to kind of our working worksheets that I think would really, frankly, confuse people. They're useful for our purposes. This is really a clear, accessible way to present it, and I was going to suggest that whatever the final version is, maybe we could have some hard copies by the door that people could take a look at as well. But thank you to the people who worked on this, because it's much clearer than I've seen a lot of working groups really be able to use this. So thank you.
No, I appreciate that, and well, appreciate your thoughts that we're at least heading in the right direction, and the idea of having handouts. I'll have to leave that to Marika, Mary, whoever the appropriate people are, to see if that's possible and arrange to get it done. But these are too detailed to put up on a screen, so I think you're right about that, and possibly, and this is a question to Marika, I guess, as we're talking, if we could have them have this document put on the link to our meeting on the ICANN website. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Yes, we can definitely have it posted on the wiki page that's linked to the meeting form, and we can also have a couple of copies in the room. And I think we probably should be able as well to have a presentation laptop, so we can project the document, and, you know, should people want to talk about a specific question or a topic, you know, we could scroll to that the relevant section, so people in the room can look at it at the same time. And obviously also have it up in Adobe Connect, so people can scroll through there and look at it there as well. But of course, indeed, if we do want to have it posted, it may be good that we set a cut-off date by which edits would need to be received, so that we don't have, you know, different versions in circulations or posted. So I don't know if that's possible, that we give people a deadline by which they send edits, and otherwise, you know, this will be the version that we'll put up and distribute.
I'd be on mute there, Don.
I'm sorry, I hadn't taken myself off mute. Well, you know, will you tell us when you need it by, and we'll just set the deadline. And maybe we can talk about this after the call, but I can't see there would be more than a day or so out.
Yep. Right, so this is Marika. I think, you know, for example, I'm starting traveling on Friday. It's fortunately very nearby for me, so ideally, you know, close of business on Thursday, so first thing on Friday we can just upload it if that's reasonable and feasible, although I presume a lot of you will actually start traveling before that, so may need to get it in early.
Okay, we'll send this out to the list, but when we say close of business, have to work on which time zone we're talking about, but close of business tomorrow, so we all have a chance to review a final version before it goes up. We all meaning the chairs group, whatever we want to call ourselves. I refuse to use the word leadership team. I'm sick of hearing it. Any other thoughts on London? Could I ask just out of curiosity if people who are using Adobe could put your hands up just to get an idea of who's going to be at face-to-face? Good. Nice turnout. Oh, there are some folks I was hoping to put faces to names. More folks are coming up. So, okay. And if you'll be there and won't be able to attend to face-to-face, if you see me or not in general, if you see other members of the committee, flag yourselves. David did that in Singapore. I don't want to... Oh, Holly?
No,
wait a minute.
I've got to just take...
Yeah, as soon as I said it, I realized, wait a minute, hands are up. Could everybody who's got your hand up not to talk, take your hand down? Okay. I should have suggested some other symbol. It would have made life easier. Stephanie?
I think she's...
Stephanie, is your hand... Steph, are you on mute? We can't hear you if you're trying to talk here. Okay. Stephanie, if you can hear me, if you could put something in chat. It's an interesting discussion on spam in the margins here. Something to take up another time. Yeah, I don't want to keep people on the phone if we've really covered everything for today. You know, D4 I think was a little confusing, but there wasn't much to it. It's fairly short. There's not a lot of issues to discuss, although the issues have some challenges to them. We usually have more than one question to address in a call. Okay, last call for comments or thoughts, and we can wrap early for a change. All right. Thanks for your... Thanks for your time. I hope to see or hear people during the London session. And we will convene again, July 8th? We won't meet the week after I can.
Excellent. Thank
and
you.
Keep your thoughts coming on the list.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Why don't we stop the recording and get back to the world.